Good evening, Lehigh Valley, and welcome to Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm Sally Hanlon, your host this evening, and we talk about on this program things that are happening in our community, business-wise and individual-wise, particularly a lot of our entrepreneurs and small business folks, and tonight is no exception. We have with us in the studio tonight Lehigh Valley resident Pamela Varcone, who was just recently honored by the Pearl S. Buck International as a 2017 Woman of Influence. Tonight, we're going to talk a little bit about Pam and her background. She has deep roots here in the Lehigh Valley, and as I was researching this, I didn't realize how deep they went. But we're also going to talk about this award because this is quite a prestigious award. Pam, welcome to the show this evening.
Thank you so much, Sally.
It's great to have you here. It's been a while since you and I have connected,
it
too.
It has, and our friendship goes back, I won't say how many decades.
Yeah, to those deep roots that I was just referring to. Yeah. Okay. Before I talk about the Pearl S. Buck Award and why this is just so important, let's talk a little bit about how Pam sort of grew her history within the Lehigh Valley. And a couple of key points that come up to me is, Pam, you and I met years ago in the chamber.
Yes.
When it was the Allentown Lehigh County Chamber.
Yes.
So that's your first clue, audience. Anyhow, you started the TV show on PBS, correct?
I did. Actually, it was on WFMZ.
Oh, okay.
Yes. I did at one time in my career. I did also have it a TV show on PBS.
Okay.
But with the chamber, it started on WFMZ, and at that time it was called Challenges.
That's right. I couldn't remember the name.
Yes.
Business Matters has stuck in my head, and
yes,
I couldn't get beyond that. And you did that for a number of years, didn't you?
I did. I started out, Sally, I was one of the first women on the Chamber of Commerce Board of Governors.
Yep.
I think I was number three.
You and I were there about the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And then I ended up being the chair of the Public Relations Committee of the Chamber,
right,
which at that time was a very active, somewhat powerful committee because it controlled the public view of the Chamber of Commerce and put a public face on the Chamber of Commerce. And our committee, our Public Relations Committee, which was just made up of, you know, so many important people to the city of Allentown, some of whom have passed, but for instance, Elspeth Heyman, who many people know, was on that committee.
Mm-hmm.
It was really very active. And we started the television show to get the Chamber's message out there and to be able to deliver information where people presented both sides of an issue. So it was wonderful, and I started out as the executive producer, and the wonderful Roger Mullen,
oh, I remember Roger,
the late yes, Roger Mullen, former chairman of the board of Mack Trucks, he was our first host. He was such a, you know, charmer and raconteur and so well-traveled and knowledgeable that he could talk on any subject. So he was our first host, and then Roger decided to retire from show business, and
not Mack Trucks, just show business.
Yes, and I took over as host, and so between my executive producing and the hosting, I was there for a number of years.
So, if you were to look back, do you look at that public relations beginning? Now, you had also been in your own firm,
yes,
and you had been doing presentations. Did that sort of give you the energy, the vision that led to the subsequent growth that you had in government and then going internationally with your work?
I think any time that you can get public exposure and get comfortable in that role, I think it just helps you take yourself, your development to another level and another layer. And I can tell you doing live television, because it was live.
It wasn't taped. I remember that.
Doing live television really develops your skill set, and it increases your ability to think three sentences in front of what is being said. So from that, of course, it not only was, I think, very good for the chamber and helped develop their public image, which was our goal, but it also, quite frankly, gave me some name recognition,
mm-hmm,
and allowed me to move forward and be able to do some things I wanted to do.
Well, and that's, you know, you have been very dedicated to the Lehigh Valley. I mean, if I look back over the past, you know, you were on city council, you were on the planning commission in Allentown, you ran for mayor. of Allentown at one point. You've given to a lot of efforts to women within Allentown with founding the Power of Women, which was your campaign committee, correct?
Yes, it actually, the Power of Women, which I was so proud of, it ran for almost 14 years. But it started actually as part of my campaign for city council.
Oh, okay.
And when it's interesting, local politics is a very interesting game. And when I decided that I was going to run for city council, and that initiative, that thought process started when I was appointed to the City Planning Commission. And I served on the Planning Commission for 5 years and realized that you really could make a difference. Mm-hmm. Every vote we cast, every economic development project that we approved made a difference somewhere. And that was exciting and exhilarating. So when an unexpected opening came up on City Council, I did what most women do, especially on a local level. I called my best girlfriends and my network. And I said, would you like to form a campaign committee with me?
Let's all learn together.
Yes. And so we got into this thing called politics. And we were coming down towards the end of the campaign. And, of course, I was brand new to politics, wasn't sure how much name recognition I had. And one of the women on the committee said, why don't we do a ladies' lunch? And I thought, that's just so prosaic, a ladies' tea for a female candidate. I can see Jackie Kennedy in the little pillbox hat.
White gloves.
Yes, the white gloves. But the more we talked about it, the more we thought it would be a good idea. So the campaign committee had a ladies' lunch at the Barristers Club on Walnut Street in Allentown. And we had 67 women come out, which was actually pretty good for something like that. And it was so successful. We had such a wonderful time that when I won the election and the next year came around, the next cycle came around, the campaign committee said, we need to do another ladies' lunch. And 125 women came to that one. And so then when I was no longer in politics, we took those lunches out of the political arena and we formed Power of Women. And we did it for women. And it was never a business. It never made money. It was always just about serving other women and giving them a chance to come together and some opportunities.
And some networking, which is a lot about what your background has shown over the years. Now, listeners, in case you're not familiar, a Pearl S. Buck Woman of Influence is presented to honor a woman who, like Pearl Buck, has distinguished herself in devotion to family, career, humanitarian. Listen to this list of past recipients. I mean, I'm just thrilled for Pam that she is now going to be included in that. American operatic soprano Beverly Sills, columnist Irma Bombeck, actress Audrey Meadows, First Lady Laura Bush, Pulitzer Prize-winning author Sherwin Dunn, and now we have Pamela Varcone of Allentown to add to this. Now, for those of you that might not know Pam, she has been a presenter. She has been a leader. She has been a teacher. She's been a writer, author. And she goes around the globe doing this. And I'm just pleased that somebody found out she was doing this and nominated her for this particular award. But her insights, according to the blurb on Pearl S. Buck, her insights on life, leadership, politics, women's empowerment, and the human condition are read and heard across four continents. From 2012 to 2014, she served as a gubernatorial appointee to the Pennsylvania State Commission for Women and is the recipient of numerous awards, including Business Council for Peace. Now, what is not included in here, and I remembered it incorrectly, and Pam corrected me, right after the Iron Curtain came down, she and her husband were the few first consultants over in Hungary.
We were some of the first Western business people and consultants to go into Hungary. And of course, we had a tremendous advantage because my husband is a Hungarian American and is fluent in Hungarian, which is an extremely difficult language.
Yes.
And so we were very fortunate. He was able to go home, which I think is a strong, deep, native instinct for anyone who has had to leave their home country under duress. And so he was able to go home, and we were able to work there for a couple of years. We actually worked with a department of the Hungarian government, helping them prepare to be a market economy.
And through Power of Women, you helped other countries show their wares, correct? You used to have like a little...
We did. We had like
event.
A little kind of almost like trade show. Yes. We called it the networking room.
Okay.
And women-owned and women-managed businesses would come and display their wares and their services and our attendees. And by the time Power of Women was in its halcyon days, we were having 400 women come to our annual launches. So it was a very nice audience for these women businesses.
Yeah, and you were supporting women in other countries who were making crafts and wares that you were, having on display.
We were.
Wow, Pam.
In fact, we're still doing a little bit of that. There was an event yesterday here in the Lehigh Valley at Lehigh Country Club to celebrate the award. The award was presented a few weeks ago, and then just yesterday we had the we had a little celebration here in the Lehigh Valley for those who couldn't make it to the award dinner, and we actually had several women there with tables. One of them, an Afghan woman who makes beautiful jewelry.
Yeah. And you were in Afghanistan, correct?
I was several times.
Working with women and helping
yes,
them with businesses.
Yes. One time I was there with the Business Council for Peace as a volunteer and, of course, as a writer. As sad and traumatic as it is, if you're a writer, there's absolutely no better place than Afghanistan. There's a story on every corner. Every human being in Afghanistan has an unbelievable story of, you know, survival. The country's been at war for 40 years. So it's been very exciting and exhilarating, and I still have many Afghan friends, and I Skype with them and try to help whenever I can.
Okay. And from this point on, Pam, what do you hope to do? Are there other challenges, other countries, other opportunities? I mean, you've covered a lot of bases and...
Well, actually, I'm working on a new initiative right now for here in the Lehigh Valley, and it doesn't have a formal name yet. I can't make a formal announcement,
okay.
But I will tell you where we're headed, and I'm working with Nolan and Virginia LeBlanc on this, and Nolan and Virginia are fostering here in the Lehigh Valley 4 Afghan teenage boys. And that is just such an act of love and Christian kindness.
Yes.
Nolan and Virginia and I, and we're going to probably put another a larger group together, we're going to start doing dinners with refugees.
Oh.
And it actually, we got the idea through an article in the New York Times. And what you do is you come into partnership with a refugee family or families in your area, and you find people to host the dinner, gratis, of course. And the family will cook their native food and present a wonderful intercultural dinner. And it will be hosted at some nice house where everybody can sit down and talk to everybody else. And the family sits down and we eat their food and they talk about their food and their culture. And the tickets are sold for, we don't know what the price point is going to be yet, but say $40. And the refugee family is given all of the money for cooking and presenting the meal.
Very nice.
So they have...
Now, are the 4 teenage boys cooking the meal?
No, this is not. Right. No, Nolan and Virginia are actually just helping me organize it.
Okay.
The Afghan teenage boys are having nothing to do with the preparation of dinner. In fact, Virginia and Nolan aren't cooking dinner either. We're going to go find other refugee families that benefit from this.
You know, I was just reading, you mentioned the Wall Street Journal. You've been published in the Wall Street Journal, too, have you not?
I have, and I just recently, this is a little awkward talking about myself like this, but I'm very pleased to say that one of my poems was just published by the New York Times in their new book of poetry.
Congratulations.
Thank
wow,
you.
This is quite the year for you, Pam.
Yes. I try to take advantage of it and enjoy it because we all are old enough to know that life does not always go like this.
That's wonderful.
And so this is a very special year, and I will try to remember this when I'm not having such a special year.
So what is the topic of the poem that is?
It was actually, it was a haiku,
okay.
Which is, you know, a very short kind of thoughtful poem, and it was about coming into New York City early in the morning and watching the mist rise off the Hudson. Ooh. And knowing all the excitement and all the things that were waiting for you in the city.
That opened up that day.
Yes.
Yeah, terrific. Going back to the culture and the dinners, I mean, I've been reading a lot, and you do have done corporate training.
Yes.
That a lot of the companies now are trying to have corporate meals that are sponsored by the various ethnic groups within the corporation so that it can build a level of respect among coworkers.
That is a fabulous idea, and it's right along the same lines
right.
as what we're doing on a private sector level in people's homes.
Yeah.
But it's really important. This is, no matter what else you hear going on in the political arena, this is a very global economy.
Absolutely.
And we need to learn to respect each other and try to get along together as well as possible.
Yeah, and I absolutely agree with you. It's just, it's incredible the polarization that we've had, and I'd like to see us get back a little bit to that area to at least respect each other. Now, as I look at everything that you've accomplished in the last whatever number of years.
Yes, we don't talk about number of years.
Is there anything that stands out that has been particularly gratifying to you or that you think perhaps even helped to lead to this nomination at Pearl S. Buck?
Well, certainly the opportunity to go to and work in Afghanistan was life-altering. I considered myself a pretty, sophisticated traveler, very well-informed, but I had never really been in a war zone.
I haven't either.
You just can't imagine what it's like to walk down a street next to bombed out buildings and hear an explosion go off in the next block from your hotel. It's life altering.
Wow.
And I would say that was a tremendous change. And to interact with the women of Afghanistan, who are some of the bravest women and smartest women I've ever known, they get up every morning not knowing whether they or their children are going to be alive at the end of the day.
Oh.
And they get up and put one foot in front of the other and go forth and try to make the best of their life. And that is a lesson and courage I've taken with me ever since.
That's incredible. I don't know how many people could actually do that. That's, I was listening to something recently about a gentleman from Pakistan that was in prison because he fought for educating women. And now he's back in the States and, things are sort of working out, but I can't imagine having to go to jail to do something like that.
Right. Most of us have no concept of the level of courage it takes to make some of these things happen that you hear about around the world.
Is there anything you'd like to share with the listeners as we wrap up this program?
Yes. I would like to say to our listeners, please do whatever you can to help someone else. Sometimes we think that, I don't have a lot of money or I don't have a lot of time and I'm raising my family and I'm working and all that. But sometimes the smallest little gesture can make a difference in someone's life. So really do try to think about other people and share your kindness and your knowledge and your love with them.
Great words, Pam. Thank you so much. Listeners, we're going to take a short break. I've been talking with Pamela Varcone about the Pearl S. Buck Woman of Influence Award that she just received. I will be returning with a very special portion of the show tonight. We're meeting with two of our college presidents to talk about a recent experience that they had, Dancing with the Stars, Dr. Grigsby and Dr. Erickson. I'm Sally Hanlon. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and you receive a tax deduction. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love on WDIY. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
Good evening, Lehigh Valley. This is Sally Hanlon, your host this evening on Lehigh Valley Discourse. And we have a very special portion of the show tonight. We're meeting with two of our college presidents to talk about a recent experience that they had, Dancing with the Stars. But before I introduce Dr. Grigsby and Dr. Erickson, I would like to thank our producer tonight, Neil Heaver, because he's really helping us get this show together. Let me talk first about our background of the guests. And we have, as I said, Dr. Grigsby and Dr. Erickson. Little did I know with Dr. Erickson that he already had been on YouTube doing a happy dance for the celebration of the Monroe campus opening. But he's been president of Northampton Community College for 12 years, I think, Mark? Is it?
No, five years at Northampton,
but
I was 7 years at Wittenberg University.
Okay.
So my 12th year finishing as a college president, but my fifth finishing at Northampton.
Great. Well, it's gone sort of quickly when you came back to town.
Very quickly.
Yeah. And Dr. Grigsby has been with us since 2014, I believe, correct?
Yeah, this is my fourth year.
Yeah, okay. And he is the president of Moravian College, and he is also a former student at Moravian College, which makes him pretty unique as far as our college presidents here in the Lehigh Valley. Both of these gentlemen received an invitation last November that we're going to be talking about tonight, and that is participating in a community nonprofit effort to raise funds for the Freddie Awards at the State Theater, and that's the Lehigh Valley Dancing with the Stars. So I wanted to bring to you, our listeners, a little bit of the history about this, what these guys went through. I mean, I saw that night, and I would have panicked. I don't think I could have
don't
followed
worry,
through.
Don't worry, we were panicked too.
but hiding it as best
you did,
as we could.
You did very well. I want to add, just for your listeners to know, that Dr. Erickson was a jailbird and Dr. Grigsby was 007. So we had the two opposite extremes participating to musical themes. Yeah. And it was a very entertaining evening.
So he was in a tuxedo and I was in stripes. What's going on with that?
Everything was right in the world.
It was very interesting. And Brian even had the Greyhound from Moravian College there.
We had to pull any stop we could for the votes. So, you know, my children are all much too grown to be the baby coming out on the stage, so we brought the dog out instead.
All right.
Unabashed effort to get that lover vote.
That's great.
And everybody in the audience went, "Aw."
Yeah, they did.
So, as I said, we're trying to learn a little bit about, you know, what went through their minds when they accepted this invitation, what happened actually the night of, and the preparation for that. And then we'll try and bring it together to talk about what does the experience mean, and how has it been accepted on campuses, and what is their dancing future, perhaps, as we finish the show. So I'm going to talk first about the actual event. November?
I got a phone call from Shelley Brown, and there's no way to turn her down.
Okay.
She had this great idea that since we were celebrating our 275th and Mark was celebrating his 50th, it would be a great opportunity to pit colleges against each other in friendly competition. And I said yes, and she said great, and that sounded like a really good idea in November when we were talking about April. But in April, it sounded like a really bad idea.
A little scarier.
Yeah.
Well, and I think she called me shortly after she called Brian. And, I mean, like Brian said, how do you say no to Shelley?
Yeah.
And especially, how do you say no to supporting
the Freddies?
I mean, what a tremendous activity. And I'm a huge supporter of the arts, and especially the musical arts, and support for our students. So I too said yes. Glad I did, but I'm glad it's behind
over.
Me.
You won't be coming back next year. Is that what I hear?
No,
as a judge,
no.
Maybe. If asked,
yeah, we're convinced Sal should be dancing
Sal
next
to
year.
Be dancing, yes. Yes.
Okay, what they're referring to is as Mayor Panto was one of the judges.
One of the judges,
and he's been the judges. A judge three times now.
Three times now. I think it's time for him to be judged.
I think it's a requirement. Three times a judge, you got to dance.
Got to go on the floor next. So that's very interesting. And we'll talk a little bit about the makeup of this. But, okay, so you learned in November that this was coming about. When did you actually start to work on any steps or dancing?
Sunday before the Thursday we were on.
Are you serious?
Yeah, the interesting thing is, I mean, for months before this, I had people coming up, so are you practicing? And you're sitting there.
We didn't know
right. what to practice, what we'd be doing literally until the Sunday before that Thursday evening. And even then, each one of those nights, it was only an hour practice. So Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, 4 hours of practice
right.
to learn these dance steps.
Right.
Right.
And so, then they send you the videos of them. So you're just in panic watching a really good guy dance this routine and you're trying to memorize it.
So right. the video is of the professional doing professionals the routine doing that you're going to be doing.
Right.
Right.
Oh, boy.
Although you couldn't watch that too many times or you would just
right.
get
and
crazy.
While it was also. Yours was slightly different than the
right.
video,
right.
so there were changes that your partner had made.
Okay.
In it. So it was an interesting process.
So this ballroom group that comes down from Utah, did they travel all over the country and do this with
they do
folks like us?
60 shows a year. We were number 57.
Oh, they're tired.
Yeah, and it was a. My understanding, it was a group of them were college students at Oregon State University and came up with this idea, and that's how they travel around doing this program.
Yeah, because the interesting part is that they're the Utah dance group
company
or whatever company,
yeah.
but they're actually all from Oregon.
Yeah.
So I think they began way back when in Utah, and they developed the name, so they didn't want to change the name, but they were
and
a group from
and
Oregon.
Most of them, almost, I didn't actually meet any of them who were actually dance majors. One was a math, physics, actuarially major. My partner was a music major, had never danced before this program, before starting this nonprofit. So it was really cool.
Interesting. Wow. So, okay, so it's Sunday night and you're practicing and learning your steps, and then it comes to Thursday night. The actual program was divided into two parts, correct? First part was you
right,
the
right,
Lehigh Valley
right.
folks, and the second part was the professionals.
The amateurs and the pros.
Pros, yeah.
yeah.
What
exactly.
they should be able to do. What they did and what they should
well,
be able
well,
to do.
And what I would say is, thank heavens they did it in that order.
That's right.
Yeah, you
exactly.
didn't want to come after them.
You don't want to go after because they were terrific.
They
really were. It was fun to watch. And especially after we were done with our routine, we could relax.
Right.
Yeah,
so
enjoy that.
That was
yeah,
great.
Yeah. But then you still had the voting to go through.
We weren't. I wasn't all that worried about the voting.
Right, right.
Okay. Well, and as we mentioned, there was a panel of three judges, correct? I think it was Ann Baum, it was Mayor Panto, and there was a radio personality, Selena Robinson from 100.7. There were some times in the audience, and I was listening, and I thought it was more of a roast than a panel.
I mean, did we.
Yeah, yeah.
We thought that.
Felt a little bit like that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, you have to love Ann Baum because that's about as snarky as she could possibly get, which wasn't too snarky for
right.
anything.
Right.
But the other two, you know, particularly the mayor of the suburb of Bethlehem, could get on his dance shoes if he's out there
yeah.
listening.
Great.
Yeah, he was pushing the boundaries.
Yeah.
Just a little bit. So.
And listeners, what would happen, just like on the regular Dancing with Stars, after the performance and the judges would make their comments and they'd put up their number signs. So that really just gave the audience an idea of where they were. But it was actually the audience, correct, that selected the final
Exactly. They all voted and the top vote getter then won the Mirror Ball Trophy.
Okay.
And their life was forever changed.
And in fairness to the judges, that we were told beforehand that they're told to be snarky.
Okay, good.
That we had to get on our thick skins.
Right.
And that in reality, the one that was the meanest to the dancer who was the meanest who got the most abuse would probably do fare well in the voting.
Oh.
Because that's how the psychology works.
Okay, so it's a reverse.
Right.
Interesting.
Very interesting. Well, I think they were trying to get audience reaction, too.
Right.
I mean,
I
think that's part of it. The good news for us is we're college presidents and thick skins, part of the package.
We're used to that.
That's part of your everyday yep. responsibilities, huh?
Correct.
Oh, wow. Okay. So now that you've had the experience with ballroom dancing, is this going to be something that either one of you are going to continue in any way, shape, or form? Do your spouses or significant others want to Pull you?
No, I'm pretty much, that was the debut and retirement of my career, I think.
Well, for me, I mean, I love to dance, but I love to dance the way I want to dance, when I want to dance, and how I want to dance.
Not choreography.
Right, not have a choreography, that kind of. So I'll continue to dance. I'll enjoy dance. I'm not so sure I'll be doing the Jailhouse Rock anytime soon. But it was fun. It was a good time.
Yeah. And the students, have you gotten any reaction on campus? I mean, I know this is a busy time of the year with commencement and everything, finals coming around.
You got a lot of, that was great. It was great watching you. I think, you know, I express that between dancing and singing, those are probably my two greatest fears and insecurities. So actually going forth with, you know, 700 people watching you, at least demonstrates to the students that you should try things that are out of your comfort zone every now and then. The world didn't end. It went on the next day, and it was all good.
And did it go fast while you were up there? Or was it, I mean, I'm sure the waiting till you went on was...
Yeah, the routine itself, I thought, went really quickly. Okay. Kind of the buildup to get to the routine seemed incredibly
slow.
Yeah. Right? And I was, I think, fifth out of six, so I had to watch four sets of dancers first.
Oh, boy.
But the reaction on campus has been great. I mean, people have been wonderful, and students are wonderful. I mean, it's a good thing to do. It's great for the community, and I think in the roles that we're in, just getting out and, you know, taking some chances and putting yourself
and
out
being
there
human.
And showing support, I think people appreciate that.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think they expected us to be incredible dancers.
No, I hope not.
Thank heaven.
Thank heaven.
Well, and one thing that was in the program packet that night that I thought was really great, and unfortunately, listeners, I'm looking at this and you can't see it, but it was a joint ad between the colleges, between Moravian College and Northampton Community College. Great way to partner. I haven't seen the colleges come together and doing things like that before. Is this the first time you guys have advertised something jointly like this?
Well, no. Actually, we've had joint advertisements with students who have gone to Moravian College after Northampton. You did a series of ads with that. But this was probably the second time of that.
Second time, okay.
You know, Northampton's a great partner for us. You know, Moravian College has a mission that education is worthy of all, boys and girls, those from cities and rural areas, those rich and poor. So working with Northampton, which is one of the top community colleges in the country, students come well-prepared, ready for a four-year degree. And, you know, Mark could send me, could fill up the ranks of Moravian College with Northampton students. We're just really happy with them.
Yeah. Thanks. Well, and Moravian's a great partner with us and a great place for us to be sending our students in. And we see growing numbers of our students going from Northampton to Moravian and doing really well. I hear great comments back from our students when they go onto your campus. So I think the fit is good.
Two of your students were student government presidents, which, if you think about it, is really hard to do because they spend 2 years at Northampton and then they come up and they become integrated so quickly into the campus as leaders, they get put forth as presidents of the student government.
One of whom is speaking at your commencement this year.
Correct.
Right? Yeah, wonderful young folks that go from us to them, and we have a lot of success stories. International students as well that I know that have made that transition, and some new ones that are going in that direction now, but I don't know what the exact number is, but the numbers are
they're
big.
Large. Yeah.
Large numbers of our students go from us to them and make that transition seamlessly.
Right.
So it's a wonderful partnership. It was also neat on the night of the program, we actually hosted a joint reception for some of our alumni and board members and folks like that. And they all talked about how much they enjoyed just engaging with one another, you know, before they went in and saw the
Well, it's funny because people think we're in competition. You know, they'll say, oh, you know, you two are in competition, and we're not. We're
support
in support of
of
our students in achieving college degrees.
Right. Well, a lot of the specialties at the community college, I'm thinking of the health in particular, feed very
nicely
right
into
Moravian.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's great.
Well, and for so many of our students, I mean, you know, 90% of our students stay in this community when they graduate. So for them, having great local colleges to go to is important. And, you know, I think Moravian fits that bill really nicely.
And 60% of our alums are in the Lehigh Valley. So, you know, we are the local school, and right. so is Northampton. So it's a mission that matches each other.
I didn't realize that 60% stayed. You know, I sort of felt more with your student body, Mark, that would be true, but I didn't realize with Moravian as well.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Which is interesting. I mean, but for us, you know, we have students from 50 countries, 25 states, and 53 counties. But still, it's 90% that stay in the community. So we also draw in people who
end up staying here. You know, we create the teachers, the nurses, the practitioners of the area. So they get their first jobs here through internships, co-ops, student teaching, nursing clinicals, and they stay here.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not the brain drain. We're actually the brain pull.
Yeah, that term seems to have gone away. I don't hear that much anymore.
Right.
We're keeping them local. Now, I did some research, and I told you I was getting... But I was surprised to learn that there are a lot of colleges throughout the country that have competitive ballroom dancing. And, you know, just listeners, Harvard, Yale, MIT, Carnegie Mellon, Penn State, University of Pittsburgh, Georgetown... Amazing. I didn't realize that competitive ballroom dancing had gotten into such high levels.
Mm-hmm.
Do you foresee anything happening in the Valley based on the fact that the State Theater is doing this with Dancing with the Stars and the Freddies and stuff? Any competitive dancing? Have you guys heard among the other presidents? Anything?
We have a dance program at Moravian. Do you have a dance program?
We do, too.
I mean, we would be supportive of it if our students were supportive of it. But we have a dance program. Our students compete in that dance program with other colleges. It's not ballroom dancing necessarily, but you know, we're always there trying to create things that the students want to have.
Well, we also do have classes in ballroom dancing as part of our Center for Business and Industry, and those are increasingly popular. So I do think you're right. I think there are a fair number of people interested in the whole notion of ballroom dancing.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not that translates into an actual competitive team, if there is, more power to them. But
well,
maybe we'll start here.
I'm not going to be on the
I'm
team.
Not gonna, or coaching.
No plans at present.
Yeah.
I'll go and cheer loudly.
Right, exactly.
I remember when I was at Penn State, I was a phys ed major for the first part, and I had ballroom dancing. And our partners were the football team. And it was a very early 8 a.m. opportunity to have your feet stepped on. So it was something that I definitely didn't continue after college, but it was very interesting.
Well, dance and athletics go together
in
terms of learning some of those skills and,
and
agility. And
yeah, which is why I went to lacrosse. But anyhow, listeners, we're going to take a short break. I'm talking with Dr. Mark Erickson and Dr. Brian Grigsby, our college presidents at Northampton and at Moravian, about Dancing with the Stars and their experience. I'm Sally Hanlon. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse.
Spread the word about your organization or business to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced music programs reaches thousands of locally engaged listeners each day. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable way to enhance your image and to provide information about your services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, call 610-694-8100, extension 6, or visit our website, wdiy.org.
Welcome back to Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm Sally Hanlon, your host this evening, and I'm talking to Dr. Brian Grigsby, president of Moravian College, and Dr. Mark Erickson, president of Northampton Community College, about their experience with Dancing with the Stars and sort of what they're taking from that and what they're offering their students as being a part of this. One of the things that I researched to put this show together was something that Tom Peters provided, and it says, "Have you done your Eleanor today?" And so I looked at that and wondering, what does that mean? Apparently, Eleanor Roosevelt said that you should do one thing every day that scares you, that this is a big deal, according to Tom Peters. So would this count into Eleanor for you guys?
I think that gives us a year. The level of fear was very high.
Well, it certainly pushed. I mean, I can speak for myself, outside my normal comfort zone. So, yeah. which is a good thing. I would agree to do now and then.
I would wholeheartedly agree. This was not something I wanted to do.
This wasn't on your bucket list.
This was not on my bucket list, but it was pretty. Other than standing up and maybe singing the Star Spangled Banner, this was pretty high up there in level of fear.
Don't be planning any ideas.
I'm not. Yeah, I'm not.
Well, and both of you are out in the community, and you're doing a lot of speaking and representing, right. And so you're used to being in front of a lot of people, just not perhaps.
Not doing this.
not doing dance steps that somebody has prescribed, right?
Yeah, not following a choreographed. So what are you taking from this whole experience? I mean, whether it's the impact on the Freddies, whether it's the impact on you, what you can take as you lead your college, what are you extracting from this?
Well, it's what I hope all my students get a sense of by the time they graduate, that they have to give back. This is a way to give back.
Okay.
This was a good opportunity to raise money for the Freddies. Yes, it scared me to death, but I knew the reason why I was doing it. I knew it was another way to make sure that you give more than you take. We live very privileged lives in colleges and in this country, and we have to assure that people have the resources to do the other things that they love. And this was a way for the Freddies to have the money to do that. And would I do it again? Probably not. But doing it once means I checked it off the list and can move on to the next thing.
Yeah.
Well, I think Brian said it well. I mean, I think at both of our institutions, we look to really develop young people and older students who are engaged citizens, who care about the community that they're part of and do something about it, become involved. And sometimes that means jumping outside your comfort zone. Mm-hmm. Certainly for us, that's what it meant. So I think modeling that behavior makes a lot of good sense. And, I came away, it was a fun process. Was I nervous? Did it create some anxiety? Yes, I woke up in the middle of the night before trying to remember what my dance steps were so I wouldn't make a fool of myself. But at the end of the day, you met great people. It reinforced my feeling of the great work that the State Theater is doing. Mm-hmm. And some of my other colleagues who were doing the Dancing with the Stars, it was fun to get to know them in a different sort of way.
Much.
I mean, you've got Steph in the morning. I listen to Steph in the morning all the time. I have no idea what Steph looked like. Now I know Steph, right?
Right.
So, and even for the two of us, I mean, I think we've developed a great relationship and connection as two college presidents. But even I think this brought us and our institutions closer together as well.
Yeah. So, we bonded over
win-win.
One more thing.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. So now, as I said earlier, is a very busy time for both of you. So I really do appreciate you both taking the time to be on the show tonight. But let's share a little bit with our listeners what is happening. I know that, Brian, you just finished your 275th year, a lot of activity.
Right. We had our 275th celebration. This was the whole year following, actually, the year after Bethlehem did its 275th. So Moravian's the sixth oldest college. It was founded 1742 on May 4th. Countess Benigna started a school for girls, so it became the first college for women in the country, and that began the legacy on May 4th, 1742. So we just got done celebrating that event, and then we moved into our 275th commencement graduation. So just concluded on that.
Wow, next year's going to seem like a little
Yeah. That's 276. I mean, who celebrates 276?
That's right. And Mark, you've got an anniversary too.
Yeah. Although we're younger. Yeah. We're younger than 275. Yeah, this amazing community college is celebrating our 50th anniversary. So we began in 1967, grew from a handful of students, almost all from Northampton County, to now over 30,000 students, 10,000 plus credit students, 20,000 non-credit from 50 countries, 25 states, and 53 counties, and the largest and most diverse college in this region. So we're incredibly proud of everything that we've done. And over the course of this coming year, we'll be celebrating that in a whole host of different ways. We've got a wonderful summer theater program that we're debuting that we'll be celebrating that. We'll have a great gala event in November celebrating our 50th anniversary and 50 of our alumni who have done extraordinary things as part of that gala. So we're excited about that. It's, wow. It's quite a place. It really is. I feel blessed every day to work at a place that makes such a difference in the lives of our students.
Well, and you now have three campuses, correct?
We do.
Okay, so you've got the Monroe, which I talked about earlier. You've got the South, the Fowler campus.
The Fowler campus.
And you've got the main campus. On.
Right. And exciting things happening across those. I mean, the Fowler campus will complete its renovation. We renovated from the top floor down, and this fall we'll actually break ground in terms of a renovation of the entire first floor and create a center for innovation and entrepreneurship that we're very excited about. It's about a $5 million project, but it really is all about infusing creative thinking and innovation across the curriculum of the college, uplifting our wonderful Fab Lab, creating greater space for that,
and
create the kinds of synergies that we can around that, bring in an entrepreneur in residence, serve both business and industry and the public, but also very much our students as part of that, and provide a one-stop shop at the front part of that building so that especially our Southside students will understand all the opportunities that lie there for them.
So you're going to be pretty well built out at the end of this year as far as what you're doing.
We will.
On the other hand, Moravian is still building, correct? There's some construction. You had construction last summer, this summer.
Well, we renovated the Bethlehem Racquetball Club. That was a $9 million renovation with St. Luke's. And so that's operational now and has our sports medicine rehab center. We're offering our Masters of Athletic Training there, soon to offer a Masters of Occupational Therapy, and then a Doctorate of Physical Therapy at that location. And then in August, we finished the Health Science Building, which is the Sally Brightigan McShevitz Center for Health Science, which is right on Main Street, and it's a signature building for the college, and that will house our nursing program, public health, and informatics.
Wow. And you've just redone fields?
We just redid the Makovic field, the soccer field in the center of campus, and put turf on and lit it, and hopefully graduation happens there without rain. so it's a very good the campus, the field being lit, it brings the campus together in a really amazing ways. We had a soccer game, their women's soccer game for the Landmark Championship, and there were 5,000 spectators. So 5,000 spectators for a women's soccer game because it's held at night.
Yeah.
I played soccer at Moravian, you know, at 4 o'clock because of daylight. Maybe a couple parents could get off to go see the game. All the other students are involved in their own practices and labs and studying classes. You held games at 7 o'clock at night. Everybody from the community can come to watch it. So it's really great.
That's incredible. Well, now that you both have sort of built your campuses and have sort of everything somewhat in place, at least it's going to be within the next year or so.
Yeah, although there's more happening all the time. I mean, as I look back, I mean, a year ago we added 300 additional beds in the residence halls. The year before that, we built a brand new campus up in Monroe.
Right.
And then in between that, as I'm sure you are, we're renovating all sorts of spaces on campus. So we are a work in progress, I think. I mean, one of the things I say about Northampton is we're College of the Community. As the community's needs or the students' needs change, we change. So we're adding and subtracting things all the time. When Pennsylvania Power and Light wanted a line workers program, we put up poles. When, you know, public health program was needed because of what St. Luke's and Lehigh Valley Hospital were telling us, we put that in place. And so
You think of it as, you know, renovating your house. Sometimes you need to add an extension. Sometimes you need to downsize. Once you renovate the kitchen, you know, that living room doesn't look so tidy
anymore.
Never
really done.
You're never done. You're constantly responding both to the community's needs and to how the student population is changing.
Yeah.
Well, and how students learn is mm-hmm. changing too, the whole technology piece.
Isn't that incredible? You know?
So we're constantly renovating and upgrading those spaces, our teaching spaces, as well as re-educating ourselves and our faculty about how does one teach in the technological age most effectively. So
well, and that,
that's
and that
a big
to,
push.
To, yeah, that to me for the faculty has got to be something that's an Eleanor moment mm-hmm. because
oh, sure.
really
oh, yeah.
changing the way that you present, though, you know, how you even build your courses.
Right.
Well, and how you engage with students. I mean, we offer every student that comes to Moravian gets a MacBook and an iPad. So you level the playing field for mm-hmm. student learning with technology. That's a challenge for, okay, now you have all these units in a classroom. How are they going to be used effectively by the faculty? But the amazing learning process that occurs is that the students all have the same units. So when they're home back in their dorms and the one's having problems working out something on technology, the other can help them because, oh, I've done that before. I know how to do that. So you're able to leverage that. But it's incredibly difficult for faculty to stay current, for any of us to stay current as things are evolving and changing.
Well, and the reality is we know that students learn best when they're engaged.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So increasingly, we're looking at a flipped classroom model where some of the information that's one-way dissemination of information, they can get online.
Right.
And then they come to class and they engage in a conversation or an activity around what that lecture was all about so that they really become involved in a much richer, deeper sort of way. But it means re-educating and helping a professor that learned how to teach differently than that. I mean, it's true when I went to college.
Yeah.
And our faculty are terrific about that. I mean, we're blessed with a faculty I'd put up against any faculty anywhere.
Yeah, so. That's got to be tough. The faculty, the IT, just to have the systems working correctly.
Oh, yes.
And integrating. And,
yeah,
we pioneered a new wireless mesh. Because when we put all those units on, we needed more wireless.
Mm-hmm.
And so now Moravian has the fastest wireless in the country at 1 gigabyte.
Wow.
But it's costly.
Right.
But if you don't have it and you have two units all hitting the internet at the same time for every single student, faculty member, and staff member, you'll crash the system unless you pioneer a new way to do it.
Yeah. Incredible. Well, and I would imagine between the campuses, you've got to have a certain connectivity because you have courses that are at both campuses and integrate.
Right. Well, and we're using that technology more and more, you know, with, you know, synchronous, you know, sorts of activities between our various campuses, as well as increasing numbers of our students who take some of their courses online. I mean, it's all about, you know, when can students take the courses, what's the opportunity, and how do we do that in the most effective way? So we're looking at all that. So, I mean, I would say it's one of the more interesting times in mm-hmm. higher ed. We're really being challenged with the models in terms of delivery and what we do. And the good news is I think we're up to the task, but but it takes a lot of thought and strategy to make that happen.
Well, the other challenge, too, is you keep reading with a lot of the disruptive tendencies of today's society that careers haven't been developed yet that these students are going to have to fulfill.
Well, correct.
Well, sure.
And how do you prepare them for something we don't even know about yet? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's incredible task.
Well, you prepare them as you know, Bishop Comenius said, you prepare them to be lifelong learners. So if I can prepare them to critically think, to work well in teams, to be leaders, to be ethical, to communicate well, to use quantitative, qualitative analysis, then they can upgrade their skills, at the content skills, as they leave college.
Okay.
So that's if I can get those liberal arts skills honed before they graduate, then they'll be successful because they can use those skills to learn online. It's where online I think is most effective is for students who have already learned how to learn. Then they can upgrade their skills through online means.
Or our more specific focus.
Correct.
Yeah, because you're doing both with the community college. You're providing the work skills as well as the basic.
Yeah, I mean, really, I think any effective college needs to have both.
Right.
Prepare people for a job, but also prepare them to make a life in the fullest sense and learn how to have these critical thinking skills and lifelong learning skills. I mean, one of the things I love about Northampton is our youngest graduate was 16 last May, and our oldest was 81. So we have people, we have plenty of lifelong learners, folks that come to us, you know, sometimes after they already got a four-year degree, sometimes after master. They're coming back to learn some other skills and really change their life and keep on learning.
I think that, to echo what Mark said, I think the challenge is that we prepare them for the career they think they want and the three or four other careers they most likely will have.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the challenge. We as a liberal arts college, we do professional education, teaching, nursing, business, computer science, all those other kinds of programs. That we have no problem articulating that we will help them get that career that they think they want. But it's all those other soft skills, which Mark's, they do at Northampton too, that prepare them for those other careers that you were talking about that don't exist right now, or because of life circumstances, that career might not, they might have to change.
Yeah.
Well, I think the world has changed. I mean, I forget what the data is, but I believe every graduate that goes out into the world right now will probably have five career changes during
major career
his or her, you know, lifetime of work. So,
well, longer do we stay 40 years at one particular organization.
That's not what's happening anymore. Right.
Wow, it's incredible. Well, we've got about a minute or so, and I would like to ask both of you if there's anything that you would like to share with our listeners, either coming from the experience if one of them happens to be tapped next year to be a part of raising funds for the Freddie, or just sort of in general with the college and where it's going and what it's doing. And Brian, we'll start with you.
If you're tapped for the Freddies, just do it. It is a wonderful experience. Shelley will take very good care of you, and so will the dancer. So do something every day that scares you, I guess.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, and I would agree with that. I mean, as much anxiety as it created, at the end of the day, it was a wonderful experience. And Shelley and her crew were the best. And, you know, supporting the Freddies, it just feels terrific. So, you know, the only other thing I would add is, I feel incredibly blessed every day to work at a place that changes lives the way we do at Northampton. And, you know, if you're thinking about something you want to do in terms of changing your life and the trajectory of your life, come see us. We're really good at that.
Well, I just recently met a young woman. Well, she's probably in her early mid to late 40s now, who decided to just do that at 39. She went into your nursing program and had to, you know, brush up on all the sciences and all that kind of stuff, because your nursing program is tough.
It is tough.
And
well, in general, we're tough. I mean, we are an open access institution, and we pride ourselves in that, but we work our students hard.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you both very much for taking the time in this very busy season to share with our listeners the experience of Dancing with the Stars. And for some of you, you may be tapped. For others, hopefully we'll just sit on the sidelines. I've been talking with Dr. Brian Grigsby and Dr. Mark Erickson about Dancing with the Stars Lehigh Valley style. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
I'm Sally Hanlon. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse.